The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
Attention! The Sci-Fi Geeks Club is next! Please stand by.
Live streaming provided by Alpha Geek Radio and Alpha Geek Video. Visit tunein.alphageekradio.com to learn more.
Hear ye! Another meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is officially called to order!
Alright, so looking at everybody's paperwork, looks like you all have the proper password and you've given the correct knock, so you all may enter the clubhouse. I'm President Dave Nelson, here for this meeting of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, along with Brad Ludwig and Corey Scott. How you guys doing?
Excellent.
I'm well. I'm very well.
How's the West Coast, Corey?
A little too sunny for me, actually. We could still use some weather.
I think you should move. I think you should move northeast.
I've been considering Michigan again.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's not close enough for me, but it's close enough.
That's where I'm from.
Okay. I guess that's all that matters. Screw Dave in Canada, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah, screw Dave.
That's kind of what we do to Canada and Michigan.
All right, let's bring our guest in here. Our guest this week is the host of the Jukebox Podcast, and you can find that at jukeboxpodcast.com. He was on episode number 80 of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. So welcome back, Brett Stewart. Brett, how are you?
Hey, Dave. I am wonderful. Thanks so much for having me back on. I really appreciate it, and I'm very excited to be here.
You know what? The one thing I forgot about Brett is he is very articulate, and there's no ums, there's no ahs. He's straightforward. He knows what he's going to say. You make us sound like amateurs, Brett.
Yeah, thanks for wrecking the curve, Brett.
Well, that's a lot to live up to for the next hour. I'll keep tabs on those ums.
We want more ums from our guests. All right, let's start with the news.
Headline news of vital, significant events from every corner of the earth. Spoken news brought into your home, your office, even into your car as you speed along the highway.
This is the news. Here are the headlines.
Super excited about this story. Philip K. Dick is getting an anthology series courtesy of Bryan Cranston and Ronald D. Moore, two names. Separately, awesome. Together, even more cool. Bryan Cranston, of course, you know him. You love him from many things such as Breaking Bad. And what's the 90s show we got to start on?
Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
Malcolm in the Middle.
And, of course, Ronald D. Moore originally from did a lot of work with Star Trek and then eventually went on to do Battlestar Galactica. So it's weird how those two – I never thought that those two people would come together on something, but they have. Let's read more about it here. Electric Dreams, the world of Philip K. Dick, will be a 10-part miniseries written by Moore, who will executively produce. Couldn't they just say he'll be the executive producer? Come on, Gizmodo. All right. Alongside Michael Dinner from Justified and Masters of Sex, and Bryan Cranston, who will also star in the series itself. Each episode will be a standalone story that illustrates Dick's prophetic vision and the enduring appeal of the writer's past work. No other details about the release has been made available, but Electric Dreams, the world of Philip K. Dick, will air in the UK on Channel 4 and distributed across the world by Sony Pictures. So at first I saw it like, oh, whoops, that's only going to be the UK, but then I realized that it's going to be released elsewhere. That's the good news. So it won't be like... what's a good comparison to this? What is something that's come from the UK but is pretty much available everywhere else?
Most programs on the BBC are available everywhere else because they have different versions of their programs, like BBC America.
Yeah, but I mean,
I was going to say tea.
But there's been things like there's been syndicated shows that were originally aired on the BBC or Channel 4 or other UK channels, and then they're distributed. Not necessarily on the BBC America, but other cable outlets. So, opinions, thoughts on this? You guys, I mean, Philip K. Dick has some of the most iconic stories that have been already translated into, like, the world of film, like Blade Runner. That's a Philip K. Dick story. Also, what's the one? Arnold Schwarzenegger, Get Your Ass to Mars.
Total Recall.
Yeah, Total Recall. Both based on Philip K. Dick stories. And there's a lot more than just that. There's some other ones I can't think of right now. You guys excited about this?
Yeah. I think that my favorite part about this is that they're individual stories all in their own little universes, which I think can either work for or against the show, because they're essentially creating 10 little short films because they're not strung together in a larger overarching idea. And that can either be very powerful, especially when you have someone like Cranston, who is such a good actor. I'm really excited for him coming up in the new HBO LBJ series, which is called All the Way, about LBJ passing the Civil Rights Act. But I digress. I think it's going to be a fantastic way to delve into a bunch of different stories and have that space to do them. On the flip side of that, if you have one that really tanks, or if you have one that does not resonate with the audience, it's harder to recover from that. I don't necessarily have a TV analogy, but if you look at film, I'm a movie buff for bad horror, love them. And two terrible horror films are called The ABCs of Death. And that's where they did 26 individual small films inside of one big film. And a lot of those work. But when they fall flat on their face, it's a serious problem because it just stops the listen, watcher in being interested. So that could happen if one of their episodes fell.
All right.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston, he's going to do good work. I have total faith in that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Do you think Ronald D. Moore is the right person to do an anthology series such as this? I mean, given his past experience with Star Trek and Battlestar Galactica, I think he's got some other stuff going cooking right now as well. Maybe on HBO or something, as I recall.
Yeah, I think he's
doing
the guy.
Outlander.
Outlander, that's Stars. It. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's
okay.
I mean, he's a producer on it. My only disappointment about this is I see the title Electric Dreams, and I was imagining that it was going to be Bud Cort playing the voice of a computer falling in love with Virginia Madsen, but which could also be a great sci-fi story in the middle of this, but maybe that's too evocative of her at this point.
Can you explain that reference? Because I don't get it.
1984 movie.
Okay.
Electric Dreams. Totally 80s. Some guy spills wine on his computer. It creates an artificial intelligence that falls in love with his neighbor upstairs.
Of course it does. That happens all the time.
Back in those days, I mean, you were only talking about maybe 32K of memory in a computer average.
That's like the poor man's Weird Science, almost, sounds like.
Yes, it was precursor Weird Science and a bunch of other things like that. It's okay. A very sweet movie, though.
Okay. Hmm. All right, yeah. Weird Science does not hold up. Go back and watch it. It's
I did. I just watched it recently. And yes, it's a tough movie because of the aging of it, but there's still something there. There's still a heart to it.
Do you guys have any particular Philip K. Dick story that you're looking forward to them adapting for this show? And you can include the ones that have already been like made into film. Like it'd be interesting to see like them redo the original version of like Blade Runner, which was
right. Well, Blade Runner was do Android Stream of Electric Sheep, yeah, which was kind of a loose interpretation of it. So they could tackle that again, sure.
Yeah, yeah, because those film adaptations are pretty far away from the original story, as I recall. I think Corey, Brad, maybe you guys don't know Philip K. Dick enough to know of one that you'd like to see remade.
Most of the stuff I know is the stuff that's already been adapted. You know, it's going to be Minority Report or A Scanner Darkly or things of that nature. His short stories, there's probably a lot more that's going to wind up in this than the...
I was thinking that too, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I was reading an anthology of sci-fi stories, and there was one with it was like a space pig kind of a thing that was telepathic. it was really weird and a very interesting twist at the end, which, you know, Philip K. Dick's whole, I would say the majority of his work really kind of hinges on what is reality. I mean, you see that in all the movies
we've
seen where they've taken elements of that, but definitely in the books more so, what is real. And, you know, with him having some mental health issues, I think he was schizophrenic.
It was very much a
relevant theme to him. So
he was also a heavy drug user, right?
I know William Burroughs was, but I don't remember if Philip K. Dick was. That I cannot say.
Okay. All right. I for one am looking forward to this series, and like I said before, there's no further details about the release date and all that kind of stuff. So we'll keep you guys updated, you listeners and viewers. We're on this, okay? Don't worry about it. If something happens, we'll let you know. All right, let's get to know our guest. Welcome back to the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, Brett Stewart. What's new, man? How's the Jukebox Podcast going?
So the Jukebox Podcast is an outlet for people to listen to independent music and get a wide variety of it. So rock, hip hop, jazz, folk, blues, classical music, spoken word, whatever it is, we are going to play it and we're going to introduce people to it, because there are so many independent artists across the entirety of the internet and all across the world who just do not get the showtime that they deserve, whether that be on local radio, on internet radio, online, on music blogs, wherever. It's very hard to get your music showcased. And as a listener and as a music consumer, it's very, very hard to consume good independent music, because you get inundated with so much of it from every single spectrum of the internet. And a lot of it is crap. And a lot of it is not very good. And that's not necessarily the music's fault. There's just so much of it. So what we do is we compile it all into a 2.5-hour program monthly, the 25th of every month on jukeboxpodcast.com. And that's where you can hear all that good stuff. We're doing roundtables now, which is where we have guests come on. We talk about all different music subjects, discussion topics. We've been doing some interviews. We dropped an interview with Chris Knoll, who was the touring pianist for John Denver for about 10 years. We also did an interview with the kid who created Yeezer earlier last year, which was a massively popular compilation of combining Kanye West and Weezer together. He got about 50 million downloads. So really a cool guy. So we're doing all that sort of stuff. And then outside of the Jukebox Podcast, I am now going to be hosting a show called the Geek Cinema Society. And that's on Blazing Caribou Studios, which is formerly Wolf King Studios. So if you want to go check them out, just go to blazingcariboustudios.com. And basically what the show is it's going to be a weekly discussion between myself, David Luzader, who is the host of Heck Yeah Comics, Nicole Davis, who is a new podcast host, very excited to be working with her. Each week, the three of us are going to join together with a guest to delve deep into a film that is significant to the geek community, whether that's a heavy hitter like Ghostbusters or Lord of the Rings or the prequels or the original trilogy, all that good stuff, or deeper stuff or more obscure stuff like Labyrinth or something even deeper than that. We're going to do it all. But the twist is that each episode has one more guest, four people on the episode, and that guest is seeing that film for the very first time. So they're going to watch it for the very first time. And that gives us a wonderful perspective into someone who is visiting a movie for the first time, and the magic of seeing something like Raiders of the Lost Ark or Empire Strikes Back, or seeing Labyrinth for the first time and wondering what on earth is going on and why is David Bowie abducting children into the underground world. All of that stuff we are going to have a lot of fun with. Hopefully it has enough of a different spin on it for a movie podcast to really engage listeners. We're very, very excited about it.
It sounds cool. And I think all of us here have contributed to the list of movies, because
So there was a list up on Ranker that now has about 500 films on it, and everything is on it. And it's wonderful because you can vote things up or down on it, and it gives us a good baseline of what people are interested in. What do they think are significant films for the geek community? Because some of them aren't necessarily geeky films, right? We think of geeky films and we think of sci-fi, fantasy, all that good stuff. But there are films that are just as important to the same community. You could argue that, like, Goonies, not traditionally a geeky film, is very important to the same sort of people that love Star Wars and love Indiana Jones and all those good things. So we're going to delve deep into all of them. We're going to have some fun guests on to do some really interesting discussions with a whole new point of view. Because for some of us, I've seen Empire Strikes Back 1,000 times, and we all have, and we could act it out if we wanted to. We could stop this podcast and just go straight into the first scene. We could act that out. But instead, to have someone on the show who has just now seen it for the first time, and chances are their entire life people have been asking them why they haven't ever seen it, their perspective is something you can't recreate. So, and we can't attempt to recreate that. So that's something really special, and there's a magic to that that I'm really excited to work with these guys on. For anyone who's not familiar with Blazing Caribou Studios, they're the guys who do Trivia Geeks, Streaming Geeks. They're working on about 13 shows right now. There's a lot of content over there you should check out.
Yeah, fantastic people that are part of that as well. And I think all of us have had our turns on Trivia Geeks at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Also, I'm going to be checking your list to make sure that Electric Dreams is on there. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a fun time. And anyone who wants to keep up specifically with this show, we now have a Facebook and Twitter up, facebook.com/Geek Cinema Society or Twitter at Geek Cinema SOC. Check those out. There's just placeholder stuff on them right now, but stuff is coming soon. And we're going to have a blast. So come and join us.
All right. Thank you, Brett. Let's move on with the news. I couldn't not talk about this because it mixes science fiction and science and kind of twists it around a little bit. SpaceX has tapped a sci-fi legend to design its real-life spacesuits. Of course SpaceX did this. It's something that Elon Musk, I mean, you know, I could have predicted this happening a long time ago because Elon Musk is a huge sci-fi fan. In fact, I believe he's got some pretty cool stuff at SpaceX headquarters, like, what was it? Because I was listening to Weird Things with Justin Robert Young, Brian Brushwood, and, help me out, Andrew Main. And they were talking about, they took a tour of SpaceX, and there was some really cool stuff, like, on display, like sci-fi related stuff. So he's definitely a sci-fi fan. So here's the details. Elon Musk is already gearing up to reach Mars with his Dragon spacecraft program, unmanned initially, of course. And now he's hired Hollywood costume designer Jose Fernandez to develop a design for the company's actual spacesuits. He's worked on movies such as Tron Legacy, Oblivion, Iron Man, The Avengers, Jupiter Ascending, and Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. Fernandez said he worked for half a year to design the suit that looks awesome, or a suit that looks awesome. And now the company's science team is working to turn that design into a functional spacesuit. It's basically figuring out how to make the function match the form. And Musk's goal seems to be making something that can work also that looks cool. This is awesome, just because I think this is probably the first time that this approach has come from this direction. Like, it's always been function before form, and I think they're kind of turning it on its head and going, wait a second, we know how to make spacesuits. Let's try it from looking cool first, and then making it that something we can actually use.
Hmm.
Just as long as they make it something they can actually use, because remember what they used to dance around in on things like Lost in Space and those early points where it's like, well, that looks really awesome. You're all gonna die.
I love that they even says in this article that they are reverse engineering, like they've said, to make this form for function. And I think that is so cool that we are at that point where someone like Musk can decide, you know, we need a really awesome looking spacesuit before we think about how the spacesuit works. And I'm sure it will work. But I think it's fantastic that they're reverse engineering that purely from a geeky cosmetic perspective of having people going into space looking awesome. I think that's cool.
SpaceX, the company run by Elon Musk, this is what Fernandez told Bleep, reached out to me to ask if I would create a spacesuit. I didn't know what SpaceX was, and I thought it was a film. Then I realized it's an actual space program. They were looking to get a suit built for Elon to look for the program. They had 2 weeks to present the suit to him and told them I couldn't do a full suit in 2 weeks, but that I may be able to do a helmet. There were four other companies working on bids as well, and at the time or at the end of the process, he hated everything except the helmet, which says a lot, right? I mean, these other companies, I'm sure, had a full-blown like spacesuit and everything, and this guy comes in with a helmet, and Elon's like, yeah, I like that the best. So he worked for 6 months, and at the end of that, we created a suit that they are now reverse engineering to make functional for flight. The look they're going to unveil in the next few months is something we created here in the studio. He wanted it to look stylish. It had to be practical, but also needed to look great. It's pretty badass. He kept saying, anyone looks better in a tux, no matter what size or shape they are. And when people put this space suit on, he wants them to look better than they did without it, like a tux. You look heroic in it. It's an iconic thing to be part of. So that's awesome. Very, very cool stuff. I love when sci-fi meets science. Like we've seen it before with a lot of the Star Trek stuff, where things that we saw on the show eventually became real life things. So this is kind of, again, reversed and done the other way.
I just want to know if they're going to do any like super out of bounds helmets, all specialized, like Daft Punk or DJ Danger Mouse or Mask. You remember Mask, the cartoon from the 80s? Mobile Armored Strike Command? That was all about the helmets and the cars.
Yes.
I don't remember that show. Sorry.
It's terrible.
They've integrated it into G.I. Joe at one point. I think it's one of those things that's winding up in the whole new Bayverse combination. It's going to wind up with Visionaries and all these other things that are not supposed to be used. So you'll hear of it soon.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it, I think. We'll see, I guess. We've got more news coming up. You can keep on top of what the Sci-Fi Geeks Club is up to by following Galactic Netcast on Twitter, by liking our Facebook page, or subscribing to our YouTube channel. We also have accounts on some other social media platforms. Just search for Galactic Netcasts, or click on corresponding logos on the top right of our main website at gncasts.com. We have this really cool Slack chat group that if you are any kind of supporter of us on Patreon, you can be a member of. And a question that I threw out today was, what can we do with our Instagram account? Because I heard that Instagram is the second most popular social network in the world, and we're not really doing anything with it. We were doing something with it for a while, and I got kind of busy, and I keep on forgetting about Instagram. So what can we do with our Instagram account that will pull people in or keep our subscribers or our followers kept interested in what we're doing? So I'd love to do something with Instagram. What are your thoughts on that?
Wow.
Galactic Netcats.
Yes. Well, we actually, that's an actual thing that Daryl Johnston came up with. And I think
right on Daryl.
And I think I actually put it out on our Instagram account at one time.
Then my work here is done.
Cats in spacesuits. Yep. Get on board.
Maybe that should be a thing. Maybe we should develop that more, maybe into its own podcast. Galactic Netcats. That's all I got. I have the concept, and not even a concept. I have a name, so we'll have to work on the concept. What could we do with a podcast called Galactic Netcats?
That's crazy.
The history of cats in space. Have there ever been cats in space? Is that something?
There was a cat from outer space, Disney movie.
Oh, but in real life, though.
We don't know that it was in real life, Dave.
Oh.
Theoretically, they faked the moon landing, but the cat was real.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyways, I got nothing.
Sandy Duncan in the movie. You can't distrust Sandy Duncan. She was Peter Pan.
Answer your question. There have been cats in outer space, or at least in high-altitude balloons.
Okay. So, well, thanks for doing the legwork, Brett.
They died.
Thanks. Oh.
So there's that.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. Now,
isn't that
dogs, frogs, goldfish, and monkeys?
That's always the case. The animals never survive space travel or high altitude in that case.
The more you know.
All right. The more you know. From IO9.
I'll put on the mascara.
We've got a story from IO9 here, and I know Brad is very excited about this.
I am very excited.
So it looks like we're getting a Booster Gold movie. This is something that's been rumored for a very, very long time. And not only are we getting a Booster Gold movie, it is being produced by Mr. Greg Berlanti and Andrew Kreisberg, the people behind the Arrowverse stuff. Arrow, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Supergirl. And it's actually going to be... I think it's going to be part of the actual DC cinematic universe, I believe. So during an interview with Kevin Smith on the Fat Man and Batman podcast, scriptwriter Zach Stentz said he was working on a movie for Warner Brothers with Berlanti, Kreisberg, and Sarah Schechter, the producers behind the DC's TV shows, like I just mentioned. Although Stentz didn't clarify what the movie actually was on the podcast, Birth, Movies, Death followed up with a report saying that this is in fact the often rumored Booster Gold movie, and Berlanti will not just produce the film, but also direct it. Shortly after the Birth, Movies, Death post went live, an extensive profile of Berlanti was released over at The Hollywood Reporter, in which Berlanti officially confirmed the rumor, Stentz will write Booster Gold, Berlanti will produce and probably direct. This is what Berlanti said. I'm attached to a few films at Warner Brothers now, and one, Booster Gold, is a DC property. Zach Stentz, who wrote an episode of Flash last year, just got the job, so he's writing the script now. I'll probably direct that, or I would want to, but I don't see my cup as limited. I actually think some of the stuff we get to do on the TV side is richer, deeper, and more like the true comic books, in the sense that you've always been able to explore the a new thing the next week, and the stories grow wider and wider. So this is pretty monumental for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's a Booster Gold film. And number two, Berlanti is actually being brought into the DC Cinematics universe. Do you guys think that's pretty substantial or pretty significant?
Well, I have to warn you, Dave, Berlanti was both the writer and the producer of Green Lantern.
Oh.
So this is not his first foray into the DC universe the films.
But that was then. This is now.
I love the idea of making a distinction between then and now.
Hope springs eternal.
I'm on either side happily.
But I think. But don't you think he's got more experience with this now after having, what, four somewhat successful TV shows all based in the DC universe?
Yes, and as long as he gets to keep the kind of creative control that he seems to have in the DC universe on the TV shows, that could be great, because I'm sure that it was some sort of interference that made Green Lantern turn out the way that it did. It doesn't ring true to the other kind of stuff that he's done. So I'm hopeful. Also, bittersweet but possibly good news is Castle was just canceled for the next season. So that means Nathan Fillion is available, folks. Just putting that out there.
Yep. I stopped watching Castle, I think, partway through season 6 or 7. I was done.
I hit my limit with the show too, but I appreciated the cast and what they had established and made for being such a cute little show that sort of came in mid-season and did really well.
Yep.
As far as this being DC movie universe proper, I'm not sure. I mean, we haven't heard exactly that the Captain Marvel movie starring Dwayne Johnson is part of the rest of the DC Universe stuff. And if anything, I could see this tying in with that better than I can with what they've established so far of the Justice League.
But this is a Warner Brothers film, though, right?
Possibly. I mean, Shazam is too, but
so you're saying
that actually it's supposed to be yet.
You're saying that even though they're all at Warner Brothers, they may not all be part of the DC Cinematic Universe proper.
That seems like it might be the case so far with Shazam. Is okay. That I don't even know that it's at Warner Brothers necessarily. It might be at one of the subsidiaries.
Yeah, no, it said the story. He said that it's at Warner Brothers. He says, I'm attached to a few films at Warner Brothers now, and one, Booster Gold, is a DC property.
It's just a matter of whether or not it's the Warner Brothers bannerhead
and
one of their subsidiaries or not, or if it's the actual Warner Brothers.
Okay. All right. So, Brad, you're a big fan of Booster Gold. You pretty excited about this?
I am. And it'll be kind of interesting to see which Booster Gold we get. I have a feeling I know what we'll get. And we'll see if he, you know, if they do further movies and he gets to grow in that role to be more than just a glory hound. So
for those of us that aren't completely familiar with Booster Gold, which version do you think it's going to be? And can you give us a little background on the character?
Booster Gold was created by Dan Jurgens after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yes.
And Michael Booster Carter was a football player in the 25th century, and he kind of pulled a Pete Rose. He bet on stuff and threw a game so that he could win some decent cash, and he gets thrown out of sports completely, and it kind of, well, that choice wrecks his life essentially, and he ends up becoming a custodian in a museum, and he finds he wants to make a name for himself. That's been his drive all along. And so he concocts a plan, grabbing a security robot that's kind of like a little flying drone named Skeets. And he proceeds to steal some equipment so that he can go back in time and be a superhero.
No, isn't part of the equipment that he steals a Legion flight ring?
Yes.
Which, oh, man.
That's what gives him flight. Yeah. I love the Legion of Superheroes, and I would love to see a Legion of Superheroes movie. We'll have to see if they can get Justice League right and do an ensemble cast movie well, then that would be cool to see a Legion of Superheroes film. I would love that.
Legion is so perfect for a Guardians of the Galaxy mentality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so in other Greg Berlanti news, this is also something that's been rumored for a while. Supergirl is officially moving over to CW for season 2 after CBS not having enough, or the numbers weren't there to support the budget they had in season 1. So they're moving it. They're moving the filming location to Vancouver, and they're moving it over to the CW because they won't have to, because CBS, they had to pay the license fee to Warner Brothers. And if they go to the CW, they don't have to do that because that's the W in CW.
Yep.
So how do you think this move's going to affect season 2 of Supergirl for those of you that have been watching it? If any of you have been watching it.
I only saw the crossover episode with The Flash.
Okay.
I watched the entirety of the season. I love Supergirl. I love just the way that the actress brings the character across. It's so much fun. And you really saw that in the crossover with The Flash. They were just so geeky and excited about yep. things. Flash is like, is that a spaceship? And she's like, oh yeah, that's my spaceship. And they're just like back and forth. So she's perfect when mixed with that kind of show, there were ups and downs in the season overall. But there was so many great things they introduced, including John Jones, the Martian Manhunter. And then there was also the fact that, like Arrow, Supergirl didn't have a huge rogues gallery of her own, so they started stealing from Superman, whereas Arrow, they seemed to steal a lot from Batman to fill in the show.
Yeah.
And well, and some of that's hit or miss. Go ahead, Brett.
Yeah, no, I have never actually seen Supergirl, but I do enjoy the CW properties that DC has over there, stuff like Arrow and The Flash. I've really enjoyed them. So I was interested in your guys' thoughts of, in particular, tonally, what do you think changes now that it's on that network? Because I was tuning into your guys' show before this, and you were talking about how the tone of it being a CBS show has impacted it, perhaps in a way that wouldn't be as successful if it was a CW show.
It was interesting to see the crossover episode of having Flash on the show, and there were some tonal differences just in having Barry be in the show. The character of Barry sounded a little bit different. There's definitely going to be a tone shift to fit more into a CW dynamic and to better hit that demographic that they were just naturally pulling anyway. So it's going to be overall, it's going to be a good fit, but now they need to work it so she can be a part of that universe.
And it's unfortunate because they're not in the same universe.
Which could mean that we have some kind of event in the Flash that, you know, like a kind of pseudo crisis.
Yeah.
That, you know, merges two universes together or something like that.
Or,
yeah, I mean, where we left off with the hangover of the season,
Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm the one who's drunk. So where we left off with that, it could very well be that it leads to something that starts her over into that universe, or we could have a mini crisis where they combine the universes. There's so many things that are open with where the Flash is right now. One thing that I had suggested is, when we were still kind of curious if the show was going to be renewed, is at least bring Melissa over to Heroes of Tomorrow or something like that as an alternate version of herself. And then she could play Kara of Earth 2 and be Power Girl.
Yeah. I've heard other people mention that as well.
Possibility.
Yeah. I like the idea of Crisis. Because they could just basically, that could be a game changer for not just that show, but that could be a game changer for The Flash and Arrow too. Because especially Arrow seems to be kind of stagnating a little bit. So maybe they could throw some other stuff into that show, and I don't know. I just like the idea of kind of like just doing the Crisis and making her part of that main universe in that way, particularly.
Plus, I would really like to see some of the characters that have already kind of moved around a little bit get expanded upon in hers. I would love to see a Hawk Girl crossover with Supergirl. It seems like there's a lot that hasn't happened with the Kendra character as Hawk Girl, because she went from starting out on Flash to immediately going in this huge ensemble show where they're trapped most of the time. I'd like to see her get to explore a city like Metropolis or wherever they are in Supergirl. I'd like to see her get to kind of spend time with another character that can fly and do similar things. I think it could bring a lot more out of it than having her with these more street level characters like Mr. Cold or Captain Cold.
Captain Cold. Firestorm, not Firestorm. Yeah, Firestorm's there, but what's other Fire Guy?
Heatwave.
Heatwave, thank you. Fire Guy.
Yeah, and White Canary.
That should be a character. Fire Guy.
Fire Guy.
I think Fire Guy might be a character.
I'm sure. I mean, they've had plenty of years to come up with characters, so I'm sure it's in there someplace. Were you done, Corey? Is that all you had to say, or did I interrupt you and totally throw you off?
No,
I'm sorry.
it's a ton of speculation as to what could happen and what I'd like to see happen, but you know, at least it's coming back. I do really enjoy her take of Supergirl. I think they went for the purely heroic type of character, and that's what I wanted to see happen with her.
How about this? Here's an idea. How about season two of Supergirl is a totally, and you mentioned this as with the Power Girl thing, but maybe just keep it Supergirl, but a different, like, Earth, like, we don't know if there is an Earth 2 version of Supergirl, right?
We don't.
Earth 2 Supergirl is Power Girl.
Oh, it is. Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's who it would be normally.
Okay.
But the way that Earth 2 is in this is very different. So that would be an interesting take on what Supergirl would be.
Like, you could have, like, if they wanted to retool the cast a little bit, you know, because they're moving to Vancouver, maybe it'll look differently. So maybe have most of what the original series was like, but just because it's a different Earth, you've got different characters, and it's just slightly different. I don't know. Maybe that's too crazy.
Wynn would be the Jimmy Olsen of his world because he's a little more geeky.
Yeah.
And seems more like Jimmy Olsen to
me. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense. Definitely. All right. So one more comic book related story. And this is a sad one. I wish I had taps, but Marvel's Agent Carter has been canceled.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Also, they've decided not to go ahead with the spin-off series from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. starring Bobby and Hunter.
Really? I thought that was still up in...
I feel so bad for those two.
I thought that was still a go.
They've officially passed on it after getting the pilot.
Oh, that's too bad.
But that means that they could be worked back into the regular show. And they could do something potentially with Agent Carter in a storyline in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to finish off where they were.
Yeah,
at the end of her second season,
and I had a thought that maybe in a couple of years they could bring back Agent Carter as a miniseries. Once what's her face's show probably can't or gets canceled. Because I don't know.
Let's not assume that's going to get canceled. She's incredibly talented.
No. I'm not saying anything about her acting. She's incredibly talented, but I just know how network TV goes sometimes.
Yeah, but we have seen kind of the door, some spoilers for Civil War. We've seen some finishing up of her character in the Marvel film universe.
Yeah.
And also some things with Howard Stark has been kind of established. So how much room they had to use those characters again in a third season, plus the gentleman who plays Howard in the Agent Carter show is going over to Preacher now. So I think a special project here or there where they could pull her back in, just like they pulled people from the movies into the show here and there. I think that's still possible, especially because she's still on ABC in another program. It's just doing it the right way. And what that does is it enriches Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., allows them more to draw on to make their show feel bigger than it already does.
Yeah, I think you brought up a good point there, Corey. I think they may be wanting to end that storyline with her death. I mean, it's weird timing, right? Announcing that the show is not coming back after the movie announced that she died in the MCU.
Yeah, but that was also planned quite a while ago while the show was still up in the air.
In Winter Soldier, she had probably dementia, if not Alzheimer's.
And I knew she was going to die eventually. I just thought it was interesting timing that, I don't know. Never mind, I guess. You guys are right. I'm wrong.
I think it was more coincidental than anything else. Because we also dealt with the fact that, I don't want to give away spoilers.
No.
Somebody else died earlier in time, and we've. I think that was kind of a part of the theme to the film itself.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We got one more story here, and this is something that hits close to home because it's happening in my city. But I thought I'd bring it up just because it's Star Trek's 50th anniversary this year, and this is launching in my city, in Ottawa, in Canada, the Star Trek, the Starfleet Academy experience. It's actually opening tomorrow. Or no. What's today's date? Oh, it's
tomorrow is the 13th.
Okay,
you're
13th.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a big gala here. In fact, William Shatner is going to be in town for it, and some other Star Trek people, and our Comic Cons this weekend too. So it's kind of a big geeky weekend. But this is so awesome. They did something like this similar for Star Wars a few years back at the same location, which is the Air and Space Museum here in Ottawa. And basically, what they're doing is they're setting up a exhibit that features Star Trek and the technology of Star Trek and the real-life science behind Star Trek and making it into a Starfleet Academy experience. So you go in there and you pretend that you're a cadet at Starfleet Academy and you learn these things, like learn how to fire a phaser, learn how to use a tricorder, or actually fly a spaceship or a starship, because there are... You can sit on, this is really awesome. You can, they have a kind of a miniature version of the Enterprise D bridge set up with the Kobayashi Maru scenario. So you get to, you can be in the command chair. You can be in ops. You can be in, what's the other, there's ops and the person that actually flies the ship. What's that seat called? Ops and not navigation. Anyways. The two seats in front of the command seat are there.
I just know who sits in the chairs usually. I don't know
Okay.
what they're called.
So there's all that. Plus there's other things like you get to pretend that you're in the transporter and you get to transport down. And I don't know how they do it. It looks like maybe they project your video and then they scramble it and... But I think you can. That's probably something that you can keep with you. Like they'll give you a some kind of video form, like a download or something like that. What are the things? Oh, you can see what you look like as other alien creatures. That you take a selfie and it kind of projects things over, kind of like a Snapchat deal where it projects like other alien races on top of your face. It's pretty cool. And I'm really looking forward to it. And also, one more thing, there's a bar in town that has an official Star Trek licensed themed beer called, what is it called? I forget. Oh, I don't think I have the name here, but it's at the Clock Tower Brew Pub, which I've never been to before, but I'm definitely going to stop by there. They're releasing their Star Trek themed beer in conjunction with the exhibit. It's brewed with a hybrid of wheat and rye. According to Star Trek lore, triticale is genetically modified at some point in the near future to become quadra. Somebody else with better English pronounce that for me. Quadro triticale. It's from Trouble with the Tribbles. It's when they were in the at the space station. That's what the grain that was being stored, and the Tribbles ate all of it. Remember that?
Yep.
So according,
and I can't remember what that was.
Well, it's here in the story. I just can't pronounce it.
Yeah, unfortunately, my computer's freaking out a little bit.
Okay. Anyways, all this is awesome. I'm always trying to get my friends and family to come visit. So, you guys, you friends of mine that I do podcasts with, and anybody else listening, you're all welcome to come to Ottawa and experience the Star Trek deal, the Starfleet Academy experience. It's going to be in other locations. Like it's going to be in New York. It's going to be in, I'm sure, other locations in the U.S., but this is where it's launching. So come on up, guys. Have a visit. It's going to be going on through September, and I'm super pumped to check it out. All right. You can help Galactic Netcast pay for our web and audio hosting plus other basic expenses by supporting us on Patreon. The web address is patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Galactic Netcasts, and you can pledge as little as a dollar a month. And I mentioned this earlier, but it's pretty cool because at the dollar a month pledge amount, you can have access to our exclusive Patreon-only Slack channel. And it's awesome because it's not just the patrons, but it's also the hosts, the guests, like Brett Stewart is there, and you get to talk. You could talk to him. Like you'd be willing to chat with our patrons, right? Brett?
Of course. Hit me up. Let's talk music.
All right. So that's a reason to help us out at the at patreon.com/galacticnetcast. That's $1 a month. $3 a month, you get access to the Slack channel, and you get an exclusive newsletter with extra stories related to our podcasts. $5 a month will get you an extra episode of our podcasts available exclusively to our patrons. So again, it's Patreon, patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. And we thank you in advance for your support of Galactic Netcasts. Stand by.
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
All right, you guys ready for the question? Brett? Are you ready?
Yeah, let's rock and roll.
All right, Corey, you ready?
Oh, yeah.
All right, Brad?
Yes.
I always do that because it sounds like a James Brown thing where it's like, you know, he used to always ask questions during the music. And so I'm kind of doing that. Yeah. I got that vibe going for me. Yeah, Brett knows what I'm talking about.
I feel like I should be able to come over around the corner and put a little cape on you.
Yeah.
Start leading you off
the
stage.
Cape on, you start walking off slowly. You jump back, do it like 5 times.
Yeah. That's
Dave,
that's
Dave Nelson.
Yes.
You are a sex machine.
Ah, thank you. Especially coming from you, Brad. That means a lot. All right, so here's the question. If
unfortunately, a sex machine is an old junkie Dodge.
There it is.
Oh, Corey. You should be on the show every week. All right, so here's the question. If you were going on a long trip through space, what album do you think would be best to listen to as you gazed into the cosmos during the long voyage? So, okay, this is what I want. I want something that would be awesome to listen to on board your starship as you're going through space, looking at all the cool, like the nebula and all the awesome cosmic features. So that's what I'm looking for. Who wants to go first?
To clarify. Go ahead.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to clarify. Are you talking about this is the only album we get to bring with us?
In a sense.
Or is this just like, I'm here, I've got my iPod, I'm hitting my playlist for this specifically, this moment. I have this all queued up and ready to go because this is what's going to, like, make me feel jazzed.
Okay. You can have other music with you, but this is the album that you put on when, like, okay, we're coming up on this awesome nebula. We have to have the perfect tune or perfect soundtrack to have listening to as we're watching this. That's basically what I'm looking for.
Right on. So when you ask me a music question, you're going to get a little bit of a lengthy response, but I'll keep this succinct. I picked actually like 3 albums for slightly different reasons, so I'll just breeze through them really quick. The first one is David Bowie's final album, Black Star. I think that album has this wonderful, like, celestial aura to it. It's the lyrics are like deeply existential and surreal, and it's just a haunting, beautiful record that I think transcends everything David Bowie had done musically. Even if he hadn't passed away, I still think it would be his finest record. I'll make that argument that I actually think it's David Bowie's best record.
Wow.
And I think when staring out into the cosmos and observing black holes and all that good stuff, I think David Bowie's Black Star would do that justice. The other two that I had kind of as runner-ups was an album that's not an album, which is Weezer's Songs from the Black Hole, which is a record that Weezer put together in 1995 and never released. It's a very loose concept album that has a lot of like space imagery and nebulas and all sorts of very profound imagery inside of Weezer's really strong lyricism. And I love Weezer. I'm a huge fan of them. So that would kind of be my second pick. That's a great record. You can actually download it online because fans have reconstructed the studio outtakes of what it would have been had they released it. And then finally, on a more deeper personal level, if I was in space and I had left this planet, then I would have to take with me what is, in my personal opinion, my favorite and most personal artist is Mavis Staples. And I would have to bring her from Earth, her music from Earth, because the whole galaxy deserves to have Mavis Staples occupying it to some extent. So her record from this last year, Living on a High Note, oh, it's a great record. If you don't know who Mavis Staples is, or you're not too familiar with her, listen to that record. Life-changing record. I would bring it on board my starship.
So not only are you bringing that album with you, you hope to run into some folks on your travels that you can totally share it with, like, and go, whatever alien you bump into, you're like, oh, this is a life changer. This is going to totally blow your mind.
Oh, goodness. If aliens were to look down at our world, there is so much crap that we do, they would just keep moving. But if you found them and you said, no, here's Mavis Staples, they'd understand. They'd be down to interact and trade knowledge and teach us how to fly farther into the universe, because Mavis Staples is pretty much the best of humanity. And basically, if you don't know who she is, she's the surviving member of the Staple Singers, who were the great civil rights activists of the 1960s here in the United States, particularly here in Chicago, which is where I'm at. Songs like I'll Take You There and Respect Yourself and all those good tunes.
Oh, yeah. Mavis. Okay.
Yeah. And she's still kicking the day. She's 76 and she is touring all the time. If she's going to your city this summer, go see her. She's great.
That's so awesome. Okay, cool. Thank you, Brett. That was you stepped up big time with that answer.
It's a music question.
I figured that you'd have a lot to say about it. Okay, so if you're not watching the video of the show, I can tell you what Brad's answer is going to be, because he has it up on his video. But for those listening that can't see, what's your answer, Brad?
My answer, my top album would be the Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan soundtrack. And this is like, you know, all the orchestral music, James Horner. that I used to listen to the soundtrack when I was in high school, because I'm that kind of a nerd, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And it really had a grand feel to it, and I would really enjoy tooling around space listening to that. My second runner up would be the soundtrack to The Fifth Element, but it would be a mixed CD so that we could get the song, was it Alech Tadi? That's the cab chase song that is not included in the soundtrack.
That song's
so,
Klingon.
There you go.
That title sounds Klingon, Brad.
No, he's crap. I don't know where the gentleman that sings that from. But it's in the Arab states. He's in that general region. And if you were to hear that song, you go, oh, I mean, I could actually. I wonder if I have it. Okay. I'm going to take a look here real quick and see if I have it.
I'm looking forward to Corey's answer too, because I picked Corey to come on because I know that he loves music as well. He's a big music fan. So that's one of the reasons why Corey's also on the podcast this week. So looking forward to hearing his answer. But I'm also looking forward to hearing the song that Brad is trying to find.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find, you know, I don't have it loaded into here, but because I have the internets on my iPad, which is hooked up to my soundboard, I can.
This better be good, Brad. This better be good.
It is.
It's a lot of buildup.
It's a lot of buildup. Gosh darn it. And I wish I could.
Do you want to let Corey go ahead and then
you go ahead, Corey?
Okay.
Sure. So my first instinct is, just because as I'm staring into the essential everything of the universe, One of the albums that I listen to a lot that kind of makes me feel like that anyways is The Color Spectrum by a band called The Deer Hunter. I'm a huge fan of Casey Crescenzo, who is basically, he's the guy who does The Deer Hunter. It's a band, but it's all about Casey's work. And he does a lot of other things. They've done a few albums that are all separate acts of what is like one long concept album. But The Color Spectrum is individual albums that are all four songs each that each represent a color of the spectrum. So it starts out with black, goes through the whole Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, and then finishes off with white. And each album takes you through a different mood, and the styles of songs change as you go along. And they fit perfectly as you go from black to red. The way it transpires across really works well, as it's, yes, it feels different, but it feels like that was the right path you would take to follow these songs through. It nothing ever feels jarring if you listen to them in that kind of order. So it's really just spectacular music in general. And I could see just looking out a big window into the void or into the everything, however I'm seeing it at that point, and this music kind of fitting whatever mood that I feel it needs to hit. On the other hand, there's something that says, just go balls out and play the Flash Gordon soundtrack by Queen.
Yeah, totally.
I love you.
I think any Queen would actually fit in outer space.
Absolutely. But really, when you get to Vulcan's theme, you can't feel more badass than that.
Okay, I found the song.
Lay it on us. Here we go.
Come on, now you're going to be like that. There we go. And of course, there's an ad before we can see this. You can skip this ad. You damn right I'm going to skip it.
YouTube would like you to subscribe to their Red subscription service.
I like it.
Yes, yeah, so this is the only song, of course, that...
Yeah, let's talk over it just so YouTube doesn't yank us.
Yeah, so this is the only song that is not instrumental, orchestral instrumental, in the soundtrack, in the movie. The actual soundtrack that you purchase does not have this song. I don't think that they could obtain the rights to put it into the release in the States, or they felt that because the song is so different from everything else that was done, that they did not include it. So, but yeah, I love the Fifth Element so much. And I know, what is it? I think in a couple of weeks, they're going to be playing at the Time Theater in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. They're going to be putting it on the big screen. So I think the family and I, we're going to head to Oshkosh. We're going to go watch it on the big screen once again. So I love that movie so much.
Damn fine film.
Yeah. So
Luke Perry's best role.
Yes. Yes, it was. And for the amount of credits that he had, there's a story to that, and I can't remember what it was, but I don't know if it was his representation or whatever that said, oh, you got to have him in the credits. And yeah, so.
All right, so I'm going to, are you guys done?
Yes.
Okay. Going to let me finish? All right.
Yes.
Okay, Kanye.
I have two answers.
I'm going to let you finish.
I have two answers. My first answer is the 2001 Space Odyssey theme, which I'm really surprised nobody picked, because when you think of space and you think of epic music, I think of that soundtrack. The second answer is, remember Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Deep Space Nine? and they had Vic Fontaine from the Holosuite, the lounge singer.
Yes.
Oh boy, yeah.
So I want to hear all those 1960s, like "Fly Me to the Moon." The World on a String. Those kind of songs I want to hear while I'm in space, just because they matched so well with those episodes of Deep Space Nine that I thought those would be perfect to hear on a long voyage through space. And it kind of grounds you back to where you came from too, right? It's very earthy, not earthy like it's stuff that you would be listening to while you're, you know, got your hands in the dirt. But like it's a very much modern day 20th century. It'll take you back to Earth if you miss the planet. So those are my answers. I think it's time that we should move on to this.
Watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
I
watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
N
watching, reading, playing, listening,
making.
G.
All right, ing. Watching, reading, listening, playing, etc. Things related to science fiction that we've been taking into our senses and enjoying.
How about we start with you, Corey? What is your ing?
All right. My ing this week actually bleeds over from another show that I do here on the network called The Podcast of Terror. Kids, ask your parents before listening. And so we did a review of a movie that I chose. And spoiler, Matt didn't really appreciate it. It was called Blood Dolls. And it's from a company called Full Moon. And Full Moon has done a lot of very cheesy, we'll say trauma-esque, but maybe not quite as gross, hammy films since at least 89 when they did the original Puppet Master, but they've done a lot of different things. And some of their stuff is obviously horror, but also they've got a whole section on sci-fi, which includes the Tim Thomerson films, Trancers, which was a pretty well-known series at the time. I think it was like five or six of them. They also have him as Dollman, not related to the DC character. Dollman actually got to do a crossover with their Demonic Toys property.
Yes.
But just a lot of weird stuff. And on top of that, they've got some other companies. They've got something called Wizard Studios, which is more all ages content. No, wait, I'm sorry. Wizard is not the all ages one. Scratch that. Kids, again, ask your parents before going to any of these things. You should probably not click that. Maybe it's Video Zone. I don't know. But I found this streaming site as I was looking for a place to watch Blood Dolls at the last minute before we had to do our reviews. And so fullmoonstreaming.com. You could rent one of the movies for about $3, or you could subscribe for $7 for the month. And obviously, they want you to subscribe for longer, and you might get bonuses like get some free DVDs in the mail. But for $7 to get a month's worth of all of these different crazy movies, sci-fi, horror, comedy, fantasy, they've got Elvira Presents, they've got William Shatner's Fright Night episodes, so a lot of different things to choose from that I think you'll find something there that you can get into, if not some of the grindhouse type things. And it's a blast, so I'm recommending that.
All right, cool.
Yeah, I think I ended with Trancers 4.
And they probably should have too.
Fair enough.
So what's I don't think I've ever seen the Trancer films. What's the basic plot of them?
You're giving it too much credit already. The basic plot is Tim Thomerson running around in a trench coat with some sort of laser gun.
All right. I may have seen it and just blocked it out of my memory. That's also possible.
I think his name is Jack Death, if I remember.
Oh, yes. My God.
Yeah. It is Jack Death.
Jeez.
That should just tell you everything you need to know.
Okay.
Essentially, there's a dude who's got a psychic ability that puts people into trances.
Okay.
And forcing them to do whatever he wants them to.
Do his bidding.
And yes. The second movie, I think, had Helen Hunt in it.
Yes. Yes, the first one did.
Before she was mad about you and got all twisted.
And divorced from Hank Azaria, yes.
Yes.
Okay, Brett, what have you been watching, reading, listening, playing, etc.? What's your ing?
If you are a fan of MMOs, for the playing category of this, and maybe you're excited about Black Desert Online popping up, or you're excited about Legion in August for Warcraft, I would recommend actually going back and playing the older MMOs that have been put at the wayside now, because they're surprisingly good, and a lot of them hold up. Some of them don't, but a lot of them do. For example, I went back and started playing Lord of the Rings Online again, which now has a phenomenal community, because what has happened is the people left playing it are deeply in love with its game. And that creates a really wonderful community, something that I have not been able to find in Warcraft in 5-6 years, something I have not really been able to find in Black Desert or Knights of the Old Republic. And you can find these communities, and they're really awesome. And for science fiction fans out there, I would highly recommend checking out Star Wars Galaxies Emulator, because that was a great, great MMO from about a decade ago, and it holds up remarkably well. And there are several different teams out there keeping the game alive on their own private servers, which are not voiding any terms of use as per Nostalrius on Warcraft's end, because the games don't exist anymore. But they're amazingly fun, and the communities that are in them are so strong, the strongest I've seen MMOs in the longest time. So Star Wars Galaxies, I would recommend checking out, especially because it plays so much differently than the modern MMO. You are basically, it's a sandbox MMO where you are in the Star Wars universe and you have to go out and do what you want to do and take whatever path you want to do that. And it's not just going to give you a slate of quests to say, go and do this. Really great games. They're holding up. And if you are out there looking toward Legion and maybe you're not really excited about it, like I am personally, or if Black Desert doesn't suit your fancy, or if WildStar is, you know, continuing to die and maybe you're a fan of WildStar and that's not happening anymore, go check out your old favorites, because they hold up well and they're a lot of fun.
All right, sweet. Great ing so far. Before we talk about Captain America Civil War, I wanted to ask Corey, I know that you put a story into our Slack chat earlier this week about was it you that put the story in about the Star Trek, a new Star Trek game? Is that you?
Probably.
Or was that Brad? Okay.
No, that might have
wasn't me.
I get a lot of articles and stuff through things like Google News or other ones that are on my phone, and when I see them and I think that they're interesting for the shows, I'll try to post them in.
Okay, so you didn't read the story?
I read some of it.
Okay. Do you remember what it was about?
It's Star Trek Ascending. It's coming this summer. Players take control of one of the three major galactic powers in the Federation. I don't know a lot about it. It was just something that looked a little bit interesting because it's something that's coming up.
And, yeah, it sounds Star cool. Trek is... Sounds really cool. Yeah, especially 50th anniversary. Yeah, I just wanted to bring it up because Brett was talking about games. That's all.
Yeah,
right. And actually, to tie into that, I know personally from two different friends who still play Star Trek Online, another MMO that fell by the wayside and is not very popular anymore, but is available for you to play. And again, those older games have great communities.
And that's
so,
isn't
that's
that free?
That's
to,
out there too.
That's free to play
I'm part
too,
of a group
isn't it?
It's kind of looking at getting the City of Heroes kind of rebuilt again.
Oh boy.
Right. And there's
They've
a lot of
servers
doing that sort of stuff. Yeah. You can get emulator for Star Wars Galaxies. The Pirates of the Caribbean Online emulator has a decent community around it now building it. A lot of those older games are being rebuilt by fans, which is super cool. And when they were built by smaller studios that aren't like Blizzard, no one is around to slap you with a cease and desist and say, stop doing this. So good games.
All right, let's wrap up our ings with Captain America Civil War. Before we get into it, though, has everybody seen it?
No.
Okay.
It's okay. You can spoil whatever you want for me. I will say it. I don't really care about the Captain America movies.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's cool. Corey, you've seen it, right?
Shots fired. Yeah, we actually did our major discussion on Elseworlds.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, I listened. I just forgot. And okay. Brad, you just saw it, right?
Yep. Okay. Anessa and I saw it last night.
All right, so I'm going to let you guys kind of take the lead because you're a lot more knowledgeable on this stuff than I am. But it's officially my ing, and it's officially Brad's ing. I liked it a lot. I'm still trying to figure out if it's the best best comic book film that I've ever seen. I'm not quite sure yet. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's the best comic book translated to film?
No, because the comic book version of Civil War was atrocious.
Mm.
I'd rather be punched in the testicles than ever read it again, frankly.
I think that's what Mark Millar does, is he
just
kicks in the junk.
it's horribly convoluted. What they did in the film, very streamlined, made a lot of sense, and really kind of pushed things forward for, one, keeping the tone of the MCU, but then, you know, moving things forward with their other films.
Well, that's what not only the MCU does, but that's what the shows on the CW do as well. They take the best of comic books and they make them better, for the most part, at least.
Yeah, for the most part.
They did a great job. If you think about what moonshine does, it distills the alcohol down to like a purest form. That's what I think they do with these movies.
Okay. But if you consume too much moonshine, you will go blind.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Because it's just so damn beautiful.
We've talked about on this podcast before how Marvel will take one of their comic book properties and make a film into it, but they always do it in themes, like Ant-Man was a heist film and Guardians of the Galaxy was a space adventure, space opera. And then Captain America, the Winter Soldier was
political thriller.
Yeah. Political. So what do you guys think is the genre type this film was?
It was a kind of a whodunit thriller.
Okay. I could see that.
I mean, it was sort of, from Bucky's perspective, it's sort of like The Fugitive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd never thought of that. Okay.
But I think in a lot of this is a film about loss versus holding on to the things that are most important to you. And I think it traverses a lot of themes. When you look at Tony's story, Tony is dealing with the devastation of, he's made these decisions in part to try to protect the world, but he's losing so much of himself to them. He's still suffering from PTSD from Avengers and what he went through in Iron Man 3. And then he loses a relationship because when he says he's going to give it up, he then goes right back to doing it again. So he feels a moral responsibility, but he also feels like he's tired and wants to kind of step back from this, but he can't. And Steve's story is still about, I think that there's a core value of what being an individual is and what being an American is. And I am also still about protecting my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the right thing to do. So what I love about this is what Brad was saying, when you read the Civil War comics, the motivations of Tony Stark seem so far out of character for him. And it was very easy to pick a side in that as a reader. You were like, you know, I don't know who was going to pick Tony's side and how they presented in the comics and the wanton destruction that these heroes dealt against each other because neither of them were willing to give. This wasn't that. This was people that were fighting had honestly good reasons as to what they were fighting for, but we're never trying to destroy one another at the same time. It was, I'm doing this for the good of you, while I'm doing this for the good of my friend. And that's why I think it succeeded.
And you wanted to root for all of them. Like, there was nobody, there was no side that I want. Like, I went in as a Captain America. I'm wearing a Captain America t-shirt. I like him better than I do Iron Man. But at the end, I couldn't side one way or the other all the way, you know?
You had empathy for everybody. And yeah. You were allowed to have empathy for everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nobody was villainized.
Yeah, I'm wearing an Abraham Lincoln t-shirt.
Team Abe, all the way.
Yep. So, it was interesting even during the fights or at the end of a fight. You know, it's, are we still friends? Well, yeah. You know, it was about the ideology, but they were still... at the end of the day, they still respected each other and respected each other's opinions, which you really don't get in the comics. at least, you know, usually it's heroes come together. They beat the ever loving crap out of each other. And then, oh, I'm sorry. You know, something happens and they realize that they shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And things weren't instantly healed at the end either. It wasn't like we finished off and everybody's friends again and it's all okay.
Yeah.
It's still a very fractured group. But that's what they're building upon to go to the next thing. And I think that's kind of the beauty of where they've been, is that as they happen, they know that they're not done yet. And that's what comics do. Comics don't end. Comics keep going. The storyline continues on and on. I mean, Claremont never finished a story. He would just keep bringing you new ones. But you loved that because you would keep reaching it, and it was a soap opera as it went. That's what they've been achieving here, but giving them their different themes and their different ideals as it happens makes it so it doesn't lose its impact. And plus, we get cool cameos of new characters that... were awesome.
Yeah, what did you guys think of Spider-Man? His introduction into the MCU
was amazing.
You don't, or spectacular.
You don't think it was too? you don't think it was too like forced? Like let's stick Spider-Man into this movie and it's gonna work, kind of thing.
No, because I think that. Well, I think they were trying to do a little bit of fan service to the folks that read the comic. Peter Parker was kind of a hinged force. What happens to Peter in the comic really defines what happens and the consequences of the side that he chose. So I think they were doing one, a nod to that, but two, we've had all these other heroes in the film before, with the exception of Black Panther, but I think that they wanted to, you know, introduce a new perspective and get that new character in there, and each movie is kind of a launching point for another film. So yep. They, you know, they're going to be doing Spider-Man, so it just kind of made sense to put him in and have him be recruited. So
I loved Black Panther's story. It was so, you just felt for him, you know, just like, because he had loss, and then he felt for the Winter Soldier at the end, you know, and not the Winter Soldier. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But no, Zemo also, right? Didn't he talk?
Well, he has this moment where he says to Zemo, because he had lost his father was killed by him, essentially.
Okay.
And he's already let us know his philosophy about death, which is not that it's something that you should regret. And he's telling Zemo, he's like, yeah, you know, death is perfectly okay place to go, but I'm not ready for you to die yet. And the way that they introduced him, we've got such an insight into who he is from just a couple of scenes,
yeah.
From a couple of things that he says. And how he does at the end, he turns from I want vengeance against this person to I'm taking this person in and protecting them now, and the rest of the world will have to come and answer to me if they want to get at him.
Mm-hmm.
Very regal, very amazing character, and again shows somebody that a lot of people who don't know the comics don't know anything about him, but everybody left thinking that guy was awesome.
Come to think of it, that was the same with Spider-Man as well and Peter Parker. I thought they didn't need much to... I mean, we all know Spider-Man's story, but even if we didn't know his story, I think the Russo brothers did a very good job introducing Peter Parker and Spider-Man in a very short amount of time. We were caught up real quick. Especially the whole Tony and Aunt May kind of flirting with each other a little bit.
And I do like how they explained... Yeah, everybody was up in arms about the irising eyes on Spider-Man's costume. And I think they did a pretty good yet subtle job of explaining why that was done that way. And I really enjoyed, you know, the fact that we got to see his original costume and that he was using like the swim goggles mm-hmm. as his eye protection. But, you know, then adding that perspective of we know, or for the comic nerds that know Spider-Man, we know that his senses were increased like well beyond. I mean, he's got like a sixth sense or a spider sense. So having something that limits his vision a little bit kind of helps deal with some of that sensory overload that he can get sometimes. So having the irising eyes in the costume kind of allows him to kind of cope with that a little bit, but also it kind of is a nice tip of the hat to the old John Romita, you know, the expressions in the mask of, you know, the eyes go really wide when he's, you know, surprised or whatever, and then having it irised down when he's serious. So it seemed like a cool way to deal with that. So,
and it's, yeah. It's
plus, my wife and I just rewatched Deadpool last night, and his eyes are expressive in that through his mask too. And it makes no sense other than the fact that it's Deadpool and who gives a rat's butt. It's just it's Deadpool. It's awesome. It allows him to emote through a mask that would otherwise be stagnant and show nothing.
Yep.
I also really like the fact that they have Peter Parker inventing his webbing and his web shooters again. He's an actual scientist. He's not just usurping tech from his father or from some other lab, or it's not organic web shooters, which I didn't have a huge problem with, but it was a huge change from the comics. They made him a science geek, and then they had him get inducted by the biggest science geek in the Marvel universe of the films.
Yep.
So of course he's going to fight on Iron Man's side.
And it was really cool. Yeah. It was cool to see Peter Parker as a kid. Finally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. One more thing. I have one more thing before we move on. Giant Man. Was that a surprise for you guys?
I had it spoiled.
that's too bad.
But that's just because somebody tells you it's coming, you don't know the context or how it's going to be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was when he started to say, well, you know, there's something I can do and I can only do it for a short period of time. I'm like, oh my God, here it comes.
It was very Daffy Duck. I can do this trick only once.
Yeah. With how the first movie was done, we knew that there was a system to make that happen. It was just integrating it in to make that work. So, I mean, there was a precedent for it. So it wasn't like completely out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a cool way to do that. And everybody sort of underestimates the guy that turns really tiny. But once he becomes, you know, 20 feet tall, well, then they take him seriously. And I mean, everything changed at that point in the battle.
Plus,
and it was amazing.
As a comics fan, we just had a movie where Giant Man is there and Spider-Man comes wall crawling across his goggles. Like, how mind blowing is that? That actually happened, and that's the biggest movie right now in the entire world.
Yep.
And the Star Wars reference, I thought that was kind of cool too. Of course they can
make
that.
Well, just having him, like, do you know that old movie? And everybody else is like, oh my God, you're killing me. You know, like my every work day, making pop culture references that are relevant to,
yeah,
to the things that I remembered from the 80s and having everybody go, Grandpa, what's that all about? So yeah, it was just kind of a fun thing.
Okay.
They put in there.
All right. So, we're going a little bit long, so I'll ask one more question and then we'll wrap things up. So where does the MCU go from here? Like, how do you think they'll get into Infinity Wars? Is that what it is? Infinity? No.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
How does it go from the end of Civil War into the next, into the next Avengers film?
Corey?
Well, I mean, we still have a lot of steps to get there because we have yet to see Doctor Strange. We have yet to see Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things that are still being set up. I think the most interesting place of where they left us in this was the Winter Soldier being in Wakanda under the care of the Black Panther. And we know that a Black Panther movie is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Is he going to wind up being involved in that somehow?
Oh, yeah. I never thought of that. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a map, and I'm sure it's big and beautiful and painful to look at. and I would love to know what's on it, but I'm not afraid to let Marvel just lead me from here to there.
Yeah.
They've done everything to earn my trust so far. So especially the Russos, who've done now two of my favorite Marvel films and are going to be leading the Avengers movies going forward. I'm incredibly excited for it.
Yeah, I think they should do all the rest of them, really. all of the Marvel should be the Russo brothers.
Well, no. I mean, I cannot discount James Gunn on Guardians
of the Galaxy.
Yeah, that's
true. Yeah. Speaking of that, do we know if any of the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to be in Infinity War films? Are they going to somehow bridge that gap?
I would lay money on that's going to happen. With Thanos being a kind of a celestial character,
okay, yeah,
of sorts.
Yeah.
That's going to be the thing that brings everybody together. So
and getting his first speaking part, really, for the most part, in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, yep.
That was the first time we saw Brolin playing the character over just the little cameo at the end of Avengers. So, and I think it's actually, whereas James was being cagey about it for a while, I think the Russos in one of their interviews recently did let it slip that we can expect to see Star-Lord at the very least in one of the Infinity War movies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, and Dave is coming back.
He's trying.
No, it'll be fun to see how they tie that all together, but they do have so many other bits that have to be introduced yet before we get there. So it's going to be cool to see, you know, Captain Marvel, and we're going to see, you know, are we going to get something that's strictly Earthbound, or are we going to get, you know, the part of the Kree explanation, and you know, what are we going to get there? Because they still need to do a bit of, I still think that they need to do a bit of space-based stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think the Guardians are going to be like coming in after Thanos, basically going, hey guys, he's coming? And they're going to be like, they'll be introduced into that film as warning the Earth as to that he's on his way or whatever?
Quite possibly.
All right, cool. Well, that's our huge Captain America Civil War talk. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. Brett Stewart, thanks again for being our guest this week. Where can people find your stuff online, sir?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great. If you want to connect with me on Twitter and yell at me about why I should watch Captain America, head on over to at Rivers Rubin. That's my stage name because I'm also a musician. That's RiversRubin. If you want to head on over to my site, brettdavidstewart.com, Brett with two T's. want to listen to the Jukebox, jukeboxpodcast.com. And finally, if you want to tune into the upcoming show I'm working on, go to blazingcariboustudios.com.
All right. Corey, what you got going on?
Well, I have just finally gotten Elsnerds launched on the network here with Gregor Sprague. And of course, Matt and I still do our best to damage your reputation by having the podcast of terror on here. And finally, you can find my comic stuff over at donescomics.com.
And finally, Brad Ludwig. What's up?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm good.
I was still doing the adventure party, and that is either Saturday or Sunday, kind of depending on my co-host's schedule. And we're still plugging away, talking about game-based stuff, be it board games, card games, RPGs, LARPs, whatever. We talk about it. So
good.
Feel free to join in.
Join the party. All right, you can subscribe to those podcasts and this podcast by going to the subscribe tab at our website, gncasts.com, or searching for us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music Podcasts. We're on all those platforms and more. And I'm Dave Nelson on behalf of Brad, Corey, Matt.
Bye, Dave.
Who else? Nessa, JF, and Brett. We'll talk to you guys all next time.
Thanks, Dave.
Goodbye. See you later. You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com.